Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And, Dad, we're going to be talking today about something incredibly relevant to our culture.
Well, it's a matter of great concern for me, Ryan, because I've been watching some trends that are taking place in this country, and now there's new data that I think we should share with our listeners. It concerns demographic data, and it relates to families in this country and where they're headed. All of that information has been pulled together in The Week magazine. That's where I found it. And these all relate to our program today, and they're going to center around the fact that, now listen to this, folks, the U.S. fertility rate is now the lowest on record.
Well, people just aren't having babies like they used to, Dad. And I'm sure someone listening now is saying, well, what's the big deal? That's a private decision between a husband and a wife.
Well, of course it is. It's a private decision, but it's one that has sweeping consequences for all of us. And let me read some of the quotes that were in The Week magazine. Here's the first one. It was written by Ross Douthat, and he said, "More babies, please." This was published, by the way, in the New York Times. And he added, in 1990, 65% of Americans told the Pew Research Center that children were very important to a successful marriage. In 2007, only 41% agreed. You can see the change, 65% to 41%.
Well, we're going to have that article posted at drjamesdobson.org.
Yeah, well, his piece is so interesting that people should look for it and read what he had to say. Let me go on. Jonathan Last, in his Weekly Standard article titled "Nation of Singles," provided evidence that Americans, by and large, are running from family life. You talk about implications for the future, and that many of them have fallen victim to the cult of the individual. Last has also written a book called "What to Expect When No One's Expecting: America's Coming Demographic Disaster." He calls it a disaster. The Week magazine put it this way: Americans are so focused on their own personal fulfillment that they can't be bothered to raise a generation to replace them.
That's sad.
And finally, here's the last quote. Jordan Weissman in the Atlantic.com stated, "We need more people." He purported that if our fertility rate continues to lag, there won't be enough people to support aging Americans as they gobble up retirement benefits. Now, these observations are dead right, Ryan, and they are alarming to me.
Well, especially to me, because I've got a six-year-old and a baby, and I'm beginning to think, what is the world going to look like for them in just a few decades?
That ought to be a question on many minds, Ryan, and it's why I've come here today to tell our listeners about a three-book series that I'm writing along with my good friend Kurt Bruner. Now, we have worked together for many years. He was actually part of our staff at Focus on the Family when I was there, one of the vice presidents, and I became very impressed with him, especially his ability to write. So we're working together on what is a trilogy, a three-book work of fiction. Now, I've written some 82 books, but this is my first effort to write fiction, and I'm really enjoying it and believe it can be a mechanism to get across some understandings that would be difficult in nonfiction.
Well, let me give a little bit more about Kurt. He is the pastor of spiritual formation at Lake Point Church near Dallas. He's also best-selling author of many books, including It Starts at Home. He's a theological graduate from Talbot Seminary, which is part of Biola University, where I went to. And he serves on the adjunct faculty at Dallas Theological Seminary. He also leads Home Point Incorporated, which is a network of churches, creating a culture of intentional families.
Kurt and his wife have four kids and live near Dallas, Texas. Kurt, welcome back to Family Talk. It's good to have you here, especially for the reason that you have come.
Oh, we're so excited about right on the release dates of these novels we've been working on for a couple of years now. So we're really, really excited.
You and I have bitten off a huge task that we have agreed to do, and that is to write three novels. They're going to be entitled Fatherless, Childless, and Godless. And let me take a stab at explaining what we're doing here, and then I'd like you to elaborate. These three books are prophetic of where we're headed as a nation. If the present trends and demographics continue, what will the world, and especially this country, look like in 30 years? And the first book begins in 2042, when the world is very different for the reasons that we have described already today. And we want to explain what will be happening if it continues to move in the direction that now seems almost inevitable. Take that and explain in greater detail what our purpose is here.
Right. Well, the first novel is set in the year 2042. And what we've done is looked out 30 years and say, what if the current trends continue demographically, where will we be in 30 years? And therefore, what will be the reality that our children live in at that time?
It really represents an inversion of the pyramid.
It does. The pyramid will flip in that we will have more of the aged than we have the young for the first time in human history. Mm. And the closest thing we've had to it was the Black Plague, where there was economic devastation following the devastation of the plague itself. Why? Because you need more young and productive working in order to support the elderly yeah. who need care. Well, human history has always worked that way. Why? Because we valued children. We valued having children. Over the past roughly century, that has shifted to where children have been viewed as a cost and a burden rather than as a blessing. Well, all of these trends are coming together to create something I call uncharted water. We're going to be swimming in different water, and it has circling sharks. And these novels kind of unpack, well, what are those circling sharks in terms of the economic implications of that, the social implications of that, the cultural battles that will ensue. We're already seeing some of that, but we're right at the beginning. This moves us out 30 years and says, this is where we're heading. And this script is already written. This isn't radical speculation. We already know who has been born, who hasn't been born. We already know the population by age. Mm. So we're just moving it forward 30 years.
And you came out and we had lunch together and we talked about this concept. And it's clear now that this is not just an idea that you came up with about the demographics. The declining birth rate and the aging of the population is being written about today by sociologists and futurologists and those who are acquainted with what happens when populations change. And this is ominous because it is almost inevitable that we're moving in this direction of the radical change in cultures around the world. Now, Japan, it's already happened.
Right. Japan currently has the oldest average citizen on the planet.
Wow.
And Russia?
Russia is there. There are most of the European nations are facing this dramatic aging
France,
of the population.
For example.
That's right,
mm.
France. Germany, recently I saw an interesting ad campaign launched in Germany where they were trying to get people to have children and encourage them to do so for the future of Germany. So these things are happening. They're not getting a lot of press, but they are absolutely fascinating, especially as you're writing fiction, to say, let's set our stories in that world. Aslan, the lion in the famous stories by C.S. Lewis, once said, all men get what they want. They don't always like it. And what we're seeing is what we've wanted all of these years is I want to be free from the burden of children. I want to be free from the financial responsibilities. I want to pursue the American dream is now leading to a situation in which those of us who are older baby boomers and so forth are about to get what we want. And that is a world in which there are too few young to take care of the old. Mm. And imagine, which is what we've done in these novels, imagine the conflicts that will ensue as a result of that.
Now, Kurt, when you shared these ideas and these projections with me, I sat down and wrote a note to you. I had seen some of the things you had written on this subject, and we've gone on now to write the first two books. But this is what I said. Kurt, you are far ahead of your time. Not that others haven't foreseen the coming of the population inversion, but you're the first Christian writer I've read who recognizes and articulates the spiritual and social implications that it will bring. Someday, these three books will be remembered as being prophetic of a time when biblical concepts of morality and life will have collapsed. Mm. Murder, suicide, infanticide, euthanasia, eugenics, and indeed marriage and the family will all be redefined if present trends continue. Imagine a world where huge numbers of older Americans, and some younger ones too, will submit themselves to killing clinics supposedly for the benefit of those they love. In other words, they're almost heroes because they're doing the sacrificial thing on behalf of the young. Hmm. Consider a time 30 years from now when husbands and wives who begat babies will be called breeders as though their procreation insults the nation's social etiquette. This book, which I'm honored to have co-authored, is a dire warning to all who take the scriptures literally and still understand the meaning of evil. You have drawn a bead on the future of humanity. Mm. That's not bad in itself.
Yeah, that's pretty well written.
Does that kind of summarize where we're headed?
It was interesting when I received that note from you. You're absolutely right. And to speak to those issues in a nonfiction book, I wouldn't read it. Would you read it? Because it's depressing. It's dark. But people read these kind of things every day in John Grisham, in James Patterson, in these thriller novels. Because we thrive on the conflict that a story brings. And so in partnering with the publisher, one of the goals of a novel series is to make it really entertaining to read. And so, again, that's another reason we set it in the future. I should clarify, this is dystopian literature, and that's a specific genre of fiction. You would be familiar with Brave New World, or many will know The Hunger Games.
Sure.
So these are of that genre, which is we're setting it out in the future. It's a very dark future. But in being a dark future, it's sort of like the ghost of Christmas future in Dickens' story. Mm. You're seeing what the future looks like so that today we look at it and say, well, does it have to be that way? Or what if we make changes today? Could we move in a different direction?
There are profound spiritual implications for this, aren't there?
In fact.
And that's what keeps it from being depressing and dragging us into a hole we couldn't get out of, because there is only one answer to what is coming.
In fact, and I told you this earlier, I, at the core of my being, consider this a book series about spiritual warfare, the ultimate in spiritual warfare. What do I mean by that? It goes all the way back to Genesis 1, 2, and 3. The scriptures tell us that God, after all of his creation, for 5 days, showing and revealing bits of who he is through creating the mountains and the birds and dogs and, for some reason, cats and so on and so forth. After all of that creativity that gave us a snapshot of who God is, what did he do on the last day? He created the pinnacle of general revelation of himself. And what was it? He created man and woman and brought them together and said, do what? Create a family. Mm. And the family is the highest expression of God's image on earth. And guess who hates that? Our enemy, Satan, hates that. And his battle and assault against the Imago Dei, against the image of God on earth, has occurred since Genesis chapter 3 with the fall. But we believe, and this novel series is depicting, we don't pretend to know all of how the end times will play out, but we do know this. We live in enemy-occupied territory. And we're under assault by an enemy who hates the image of God as expressed in marriage. Ephesians 5 tells us that marriage is a picture of what? A picture of the gospel in a mysterious way. Satan hates that. We also know that children are the Imago Dei, those made in the image of God. Satan hates the image of God. It's his mortal enemy. And so these novels depict a season in which the image of God is coming under tremendous attack. And what's, I guess, most frightening about these stories is how common sense they seem to be, how pragmatic
yeah,
the
you
evil.
You don't have to have a prophetic skill in order to see this coming. Everybody can see it.
Right. All of those who've read the book so far have said the same thing, and that is, oh my goodness, this is exactly where we're heading. That said, these books are also spiritual warfare in the other direction. They're a counterattack against our enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want to not just explore the darkness that's on the horizon, but the resilient, shining beauty of God's design for the home that the most ardent forces of hell cannot destroy.
You know, Kurt, when I was at Children's Hospital in the 70s, the Lord began talking to me, I think, not in audible words, but talking to me about the family. And I got very concerned about it. In fact, I think I mentioned on the radio, a friend of mine was on our tennis team when I was in college, and we took a trip together, and his wife was with us, and she remembers me talking about my concern for the family. I was 21 years old, and I saw then that the family was going to come under attack and that it was going to be threatened. And we really had to do what we could with our resources to preserve it. And so in 1977, I did a really radical thing. I resigned from my position as a professor where there were all of the amenities and the support systems to go along with a professional life, including an accounting department, a legal department, and then all the physicians and other professionals who were there, all of that surrounding me. And it was a scary thing to walk out of there and start a little two-room office because I didn't know where that was going. Neither did Shirley, who was worried about whether she's going to continue eating or not. But it was early on. Now, I don't want to sound like Father Time here, but I recognize that the family is in great danger and that as it goes, so goes the nation. So I began talking about that, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and into the new millennia. And here we are with hatred for the family.
Mm-hmm.
Hatred that comes only from the evil one, I am convinced.
Mm-hmm.
Because you destroy that and you destroy or damage or eliminate the next generation. And that's where we're headed.
Dad, let me ask, you know, you were on that trip with a guy on your tennis team, 21 years old. What things were you foreseeing at that point? What things were shaping your future even at that age?
Well, I was beginning to see a rising tide of divorce and conflict in marriage. I was beginning to see parents who really didn't seem to understand what raising children was all about. I saw selfishness. Mm. I saw infidelity. It wasn't nearly what it is today.
Sure.
But you evaluate the trip of a train down the track, not about where it is now, but where it's going. And I saw a bridge out down there. And I committed myself to try to do what I could to preserve the family. And I've been working on it for over 40 years now. And just recently, this nation has lurched to the left.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking politically now. I'm talking about the change of values that is being expressed by a majority of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And it puts a lump in my throat because everything I have fought for is on the line and is in danger now. And that's why, Kurt, when you came out and said, let's write on this subject, I said, let's do it. I'm not a novelist, but it's been a fun exercise so far, and I've leaned very heavily on you.
Hey, listen, you guys, you've been talking about the topic, but you've not really specifically talked about the book. I've been reading it. From page one, it was captivating. A lot of the authors I read, I like the subject so much that I overlook bad writing. This one, from page one, grabs you. Listeners will really be captivated by this series. I promise.
That's encouraging to hear, because if it isn't engaging and well-written
yeah.
and entertaining, again, this is fiction. That's why we read. Can I read something from Paul Harvey that,
sure.
that plays off of what Ryan, you just said, and maybe mm-hmm. this is a good place to land. But one of the questions we've been asked is, why fiction and why now? Well, after 40 years of writing and speaking and broadcasting on these themes in the realm of nonfiction, I felt it was time to take all of the things that you've been communicating and put them into a story form so that it's depicted more than described. And one of the reasons for that is something that inspired me years ago that Paul Harvey, the famous broadcaster, wrote in a column. And it goes like this: the power of art over argument. Nobody could have persuaded a generation of Americans to produce a baby boom, yet Shirley Temple movies made every couple want to have one. Mm-hmm. Military enlistments were lagging for our Air Force until almost overnight, a movie called Top Gun had recruits standing in line. The power of art over argument. The elevation of the downtrodden never relies on logic. It is instead facilitated by the persistent persuasion of gifted penmen. British sweatshops for children existed only until Dickens wrote about them. American slaves were slaves only until Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote about them. Oh yes, Lincoln himself credited her with having started the Civil War. And you may recall, she wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. The power of art over argument. More persuasive than any orator is the artist who can reduce complex considerations to a political cartoon. Animal activists bemoan the difficulty of making most people relate to animals. Yet once upon a time, a cartoonist named Walt Disney created an animal character called Bambi, and in 1 year, deer hunting nosedived from a $5.7 million business to $1 million. The power of art over argument. Statutes mandating more humane treatment for draft horses were initiated by a book. What do you think it was? Black Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
You want to convince the unconvinced, don't call to arms. Call to art. And one of our goals here is to create very compelling artistic expression through novels of the themes that we've been concerned about so that this generation and the next generation will be immersed in realities, again, like the Ghost of Christmas Future that says, well, what if we change now?
Mm-hmm.
Could we make a different future? Mm-hmm. And there is great hope in these stories, but we don't have time to talk about
that
today.
That's the bottom line of what we're writing. It's not too late.
That's right.
The Lord can do a miracle in this culture.
And you may be surprised how simple those miracles will be. We call them vows, such as I do, and the crying of the voice of a little baby that's born.
That's right.
It's God's design for the family that is the hope of the future.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's why it's encouraging to hear your reaction to the initial pages of the book and hopefully the whole series, because we're trying to create great stories that will be compelling and that as a result will slip through the back door of the imagination to convince the heart.
Well, our time is gone. Kurt, I want to invite you back next time because you have some clips of scenes from the book and you've had it professionally read, and we'll let our listeners hear a little bit of what is in this book. Let's talk some more about it next time. I'm really honored to be part of this project with you, Kurt.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor and look forward to talking again about it.
Can't wait. In the meantime, if listeners would like a copy of Fatherless, the first book of the series, now available in paperback, or the brand new book, Childless, it releases tomorrow on October 1st. You can get copies from us here at Family Talk. Go to drjamesdobson.org or call us 877-732-6825. And think about the friends and family in your life that might enjoy these books as gifts. Like I said, they are captivating novels. And we'll have a link to some of the articles we mentioned in the beginning of the program, which really support the basis for these novels. Again, your starting place for all of this is drjamesdobson.org. And finally, as we are heading into the end of the year, your financial contribution will really have a huge impact on how we plan for next year. We are launching a new project that's going to make my dad's entire archive of material, decades of work, broadcasts, videos, letters, articles, all this available to you on demand. Whatever problem you're facing in parenting or marriage, you can topically search this entire archive to get the help that you need. But programs like this do take finances. So to partner with us, you can donate to Family Talk on our website, drjamesdobson.org, our Facebook page, our Family Talk app, or once again, you can call us, 877-732-6825. Thanks for tuning in today, and make plans to join us again next time for more of the future of the family with my dad and Kurt Bruner right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson. For those of you who enjoy our radio program, Family Talk, I have some good news. When you're not able to hear Family Talk right here on your favorite Christian radio station, you can catch us 24 hours a day by downloading the new and free Family Talk mobile app. Visit your app marketplace to download it today. And thanks for listening to Family Talk.